If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. Hi, this is Craig. Just want to let you know you can now advertise here on Everyone Loves Guitar podcast. For more information, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. I got a really interesting guest with us today and a really tremendous player with Rowan Robertson. And most of you guys listening have heard of him. If you don't know his name, you've definitely heard his playing. He's currently performing in the Las Vegas production show, Raiding the Rock Vault, which is one top five. Sorry, what was it? Top five. What was it, Rowan? Best of Las Vegas for 5 years in a row.
That's it.
And he also plays for Bang Tango and DC4. He played guitar for AM Radio, Dio, Vast, and Violet's Demise. And he's also done work as a film composer, and he's filmed numerous instructional guitar videos. Now, this is what I find fascinating. He was recruited to join Dio's band when he was only 17 years old. And obviously that experience launched him from, you know, obscurity basically to international fame nearly overnight. He played on the Lock Up the Wolves album. Since May 2011, he's also served as a columnist for Intense Guitar and Bass magazine, and he's teamed up with longtime Black Sabbath keyboardist Jeff Nichols, Nils Patrick Johansson, sorry about that, and others in a band called the Southern Cross, and they focus on playing Black Sabbath and Dio material that none of the other original members of those bands are playing anymore, and there's a ton of good material there. Man, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate you coming on the show, Rowan.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Craig. I should say...
Correct me that I screwed up.
That makes me sound like... first of all, the film composer thing, I've never really done any film composing. I know it says that on my wiki, but it was just this one recording that I played guitar on that was in a movie, but she gave me the title of like film composer or whatever. And then the columnist thing, to be honest, I don't even remember doing a column for that. Maybe I did at one point, but I should have, before we started this, I should have said something. I should have cleared that up. Sorry.
It's all good, man. All right. So since 2011, he has not served as a columnist for anything.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. Since 2011, he's been writing on Facebook and Twitter. All right, man. Yeah, we got that cleared up. Thank you.
Man, yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's all good, man. What were you doing before you got the Dio gig? And then can you share the story of how you got the gig with Dio? It's a great story.
Sure. Yeah. Before I got the Dio gig, I was just a kid in school. That's it. I had a band I played in Cambridge in England called Indiscretion. We used to play at pubs. And that was it, really. It just, you know, just a kid in school. And then I heard that Craig Goldie was no longer with Dio in Kerrang and all that. And then
Kerrang, I remember that. That was a
great Kerrang, yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. We used to get that over here, and it was like, holy shit. You know, we always thought you guys had all the inside secrets. So a Kerrang would come, I'd be like, man, I get to find out what they're doing in England, which was, you know, in my
own. Oh, right.
Yeah. And like you guys might have had the same perception. You're getting them, what are they doing in the States? It's funny like that.
Well, it was certainly all about the States for me. I mean, Metallica and Van Halen was, you know, certainly all about the US, and Steve Vai and guitar player, guitar world and all that. So it was all about the States. But yeah, so I sent an audition tape over to the record company first in London, Polygram Records. Dio, was it Polygram? I think
so.
And they sent my tape back to me, and saying they didn't need any musicians, so it never got to Dio. And then I sent the tape again back out to the fan club in Los Angeles, and then I think a few months passed and I completely forgot about it. And then I got a call from Wendy Dio one night saying, you know, basically they were going to fly me out for an audition to LA. So that was like a fairy story, you know, crazy.
Man, so a few questions. What confidence and poise, I think, to be 17 and think, fuck, I'm going to go audition for Dio. What? Like, that's so cool.
Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I was like, you know, like, I was a good guitar player at that age, and I had a lot of confidence about it, I suppose. And Ronnie, when I got to, well, I was really scared to do it, but my dad said to me, look, just you got a free trip to America, and you're going to go and play with your heroes. So just look at it like that. And then when I got to the audition, Ronnie said to me, he said, I really want this to work. Believe it or not, I really want this to work. So he gave me confidence right there. And you know, I was a little shredder kid. So I just, you know, gave it everything. And then they told me I had the gig, which was crazy.
What do you think made him say that? That was really, like, really nice.
Well, yeah, I'd hung out with him beforehand, and I think he decided that maybe I was the right guy that he wanted. I don't know, but Ronnie was had a way of, you know, instilling confidence in you, I guess.
I've spoken to several people who've worked with him, and everybody had nothing but just very complimentary, you know, like warm things to say about him consistently. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What, so that the record company sent the thing back. How clever was that to then reach out to the fan club? What, how did you come up with that idea?
I just think that's brilliant. I don't know. I have a friend now, Sean Manning, who lives in Dallas now, and he was in England. He was one of my friends back in those days. And I said to him, I said, I'm not going to send it. What chance have I got? And he said, you know, send it, man. What have you got to lose? You know, what are they going to say? No. So I think, you know, I wouldn't have sent it unless he'd have, you know, really given me a telling off, you know.
That's really cool. Shout out to Sean Manning. That's a,
yeah.
That's pretty cool. And then.
He played in Hurricane, by the way. He played with Kelly Hansen in Hurricane, and he had his group. He had a group in LA too. And he played for Kevin Dubrow as well.
Oh, wow. From Quiet Riot.
That's right. Yeah.
What was the going through your, if you could remember, and I hate to ask you, because you've probably been asked this 1,000 times, man, but you get a phone call from Wendy. It was probably late at night. She probably didn't think, oh, you're 5 hours ahead. What?
Oh no! It was dinner time. Dinner time was what, watching Star Trek or something.
What are you thinking, like, or what are you feeling when you're on the phone with Wendy Dio? That's got to be weird a little bit, no?
Yeah, it was. I guess my first thought is, I was pretty cocky actually. I remember because she said to me, he said, how would you feel playing in front of 20,000 people? And I said, well, all right.
That's it, you know. Oh, that is, oh, so, man, that is cheeky, man.
I think I was a bit cheeky. Yeah, I think that helped.
That's good, man. That was really cool. But yeah. You know, you want to hear, you kind of want to hear that. That's as opposed, yeah, you know, I think I'll be all right, as opposed to, oh, I can never do that. I mean, that's not the person you want.
So that's great, help, man. Yeah, I think, well, yeah.
Congratulations, man. It was really, it's one of the best stories I've ever heard.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. it's like a fairy story. Yeah.
It really is. I mean, it really, yeah. I mean, that happens to 1 in 100,000 people.
Yeah. It's, I mean, when I got it, I remember thinking, because I'd been dreaming about it like as a kid, you know, because I used to read all the guitar magazines. And at that point, I was super into Vi. And I read that he was transcribing for Zappa at 17. And then when my 17th birthday came around, I thought to myself, oh, man, I didn't do it. I didn't make it, you know. Vi was already doing it. You know? So I wanted it so bad, you know. And then when it happened, I just thought to myself, well, I've done it, you know.
What do you remember? What songs you auditioned with?
I certainly Stand Up and Shout, Rainbow in the Dark, Last in Line.
Great songs, all of them, man. Great songs, all of them.
Yeah.
What were the pluses and minuses, if you're comfortable answering, of having to deal with that much fame and exposure at 17?
That's such a, like, a complicated question. But the pluses are obvious. I mean, I wouldn't be doing the Rock Vault today. I wouldn't have been, you know, arguably have been doing anything all the way through. Everything I've done, and, you know, I have Ronnie and Wendy to thank for, you know, the passion I have and music, and, you know, just following it through and having that success at that young age. I'm still, obviously, I think all professional musicians, we're all chasing it still. Do you know what I mean? To be honest.
Yeah.
But it's the passion of writing your own music and the enjoyment you get from it. So anyway, so that's, you know, such a huge plus. And I suppose it was, you know, after the fact, I think it was quite hard to deal with. But I think a lot of my peers, you know, in 1992, when Nirvana came out, and the whole industry changed overnight, I think a lot of people found it difficult. So I'm certainly not alone in that.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
When it switched to grunge from metal or, like, even hard rock. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was very unfashionable to do hard rock music, you know, traditional blues based hard rock music or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Overnight.
But
to answer your question, it's a difficult question. I mean, it just is how it is, and life's good, you know?
Yeah. You're scheduled to do a second album with Dio, and then that got put on hold so he could do a reunion tour with Sabbath.
I wasn't really scheduled. When we were doing the tour, I know there was a lot of Sabbath had offered, or there was talk between Ronnie and Sabbath doing another record, and I think Ronnie was a bit torn between putting his band on ice or going back to Sabbath, and he decided to go back to Sabbath. We did get together once or twice at his house to throw around a couple riffs, and we recorded just a couple riffs on his home studio, and that didn't amount to anything. So it certainly wasn't scheduled to do another album, but I think,
okay, great. In the middle of this whole thing, while you're working with Dio, you relocated to LA. Was there any time to really adjust to that? Because that's a big
It wasn't move. Actually in the middle. It wasn't in the middle. Basically, when I did the audition and I got the gig, I think it was about 2 weeks I was here. And then they said, go home for 2 weeks, get your stuff and come back. So that was right at the beginning, is I relocated to LA. But it was, I mean, just so exciting and full on, and, you know, rehearsals every day and your own apartment and your roommate. And, you know, it was just so busy and crazy for me that I didn't really have a time to even think about I mean, it was obviously a different culture, but I didn't really have a time to step and think about it. Really, it was just really exciting for me, tremendously exciting. You know,
whether you just mentioned it's a different culture. What were some of the like maybe the cultural things that were not that yeah you know, just different? Because you know we speak the same language, but
rock and roll behind the curtain, or you know whatever you want to call it, is got you know it's a lot of egos going around and a lot of chit chat and gossip and all these things going on behind the scenes that was that's just to say a bad side of it. I mean, there's a great side of it too. But so when I say a culture shock, it's not just between the countries, but it's also just a different, doing that as well. And I think probably back then, I think there was probably more difference in culture as well, I would think. I mean, yeah. I came from a small village, you know, and there was only like, you know, a couple of kids that were even into, you know, guitar, my friends anyway. So it was just overnight, very different.
Yeah. You didn't grow up in Cambridge?
But just outside of Cambridge, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry.
No, it's all good, man. It's all good.
Really. Trying to make an answer out of
it. No, it's all good, man. It's funny because my wife came from a little tiny place too, and mm-hmm. And you can't appreciate just how tiny it is in scope, these little towns or villages, until you go there. And like when I went there, it was just amazing how different things are. You know, everything is. It's a small little village, you know. Everybody kind of knows everybody, but it's not like in a nosy body way like it tends to be here in a small city or small town. It's very quaint, you know, and so I could kind of understand that a little bit.
Yeah, it's probably more to do, yeah, as you say, it's probably more that it was a small village to a big city as much as anything. The difference, yeah.
In the late 90s, you worked on an LP for the millennials, that's an album, with a band called Violet's Demise. You want to talk about that project?
Yeah, it was actually early 80s. We started, started me and Oney Logan, who was the singer of Lynch Mob at the time, and he parted with George Lynch. And Wendy put us together because she managed both of us, Wendy Dio. And I wanted to do... So that went from basically 1991 to 94, that little period there. And I wanted to do something like bluesy because that was pretty typical of guitarists like me at that time that were doing the heavy thing. A lot of guys wanted to get into more bluesy things. So, and he wanted to do something really – he just texted me. He
That's
wanted
funny.
To do something
That's weird.
Really – yeah, really different and weird and like he was like, you know, listen to U2 or listen to this old, you know, weird album, whatever. So we made an interesting record, you know, we made a really interesting record. We got signed to Atlantic and produced by Dave Jordan, who was a big producer at the time. He is a well-known producer. He goes all the way back to Herbie Hancock, Stones.
Holy
he did
shit.
Black and Blue. Oh yeah, he did Talking Heads. I mixed or produced Talking Heads and then lots of stuff. And then he did Alice in Chains and Jane's Addiction. So he was really the man at that time. He was huge. So we got the whole big deal, Atlantic deal and big producer and everything. And we made this album, which was really strange and cool, really interesting record, but not very commercial. And I think so it never came out. Because it got shelved by Atlantic. So that's the whole story really in a nutshell.
That's too bad.
But it's a good album. I would personally love to get another shot at recording the guitars for those songs because they're good songs. They're a really interesting song. But my guitar playing is very stiff on that record because, yeah, so I think a lot of guys would – I hear, you know, a lot of guys that when they get a chance, oh, you know, I could play that better now, you know, and I'm typical like that, you know.
Well, it's only natural, no matter what you do from the past, you're always going to say, man, I can make improvements now, you know, especially from that far back, because you're not even the same person.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you working on now that you're excited about?
Well, obviously this Raiding the Rock Vault gig is just fantastic for me on, you know, in many ways, because I'm making so many new friends in Vegas, from Mark Bowles to Howard Lee. I met some years back, Hugh McDonald, you know, all these great guys and the whole family of musicians here in Las Vegas. So it's really fun. And my chops, playing five nights a week and playing these songs like Hotel California, Jump, you know, and Light My Fire. I mean, these classic recordings, and you listen to them, and they're such amazing recordings that not only am I honing my chops to play them and do them justice, I'm learning about the mechanics of the way the music works too. Like, the more I get into these songs, so it's really great on just so many levels to be doing that. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm always writing my own stuff, you know, and, you know, one of these days, you know, hopefully I will finish a project to actually, you know, do a record, you know, that I'm happy with. I got great friends with DC4, Jeff Duncan and Sean Duncan and Matt Duncan. Jeff and Sean Duncan were in Odin, that go back. So, and they're all amazing players. And we've got a new record out called Electric Ministry under the band name, which is DC4. And so we're looking forward to doing some gigs with that. And I'm always excited about that as well.
A couple of things. Talk about, to the listeners, if they're not familiar, what is Raiding the Rock Vault? I know it's at the Hard Rock.
It's a show. It's a Vegas show. It started six years ago at the Mayan Theater in Hollywood one night. And then they took it and they got the show booked into the Las Vegas Hilton, which was where Elvis, you know, Elvis's last room. And then from there, they went on to the Tropicana, the room at the Tropicana, which is where I joined the show. And when I joined it, they had little bits of acting in the show as well, and dancers. And it's a story. Basically, it started out as a story where they find this vault, and they, you know, all these songs from 1965 to 1985, all these classic songs are performed. But now it's at the Hard Rock. It's at the Hard Rock Casino, and it's basically an hour and a half rock concert now.
Okay.
And we still have dancers for some of the songs, but there's no tracks. We don't play anything to track. It's a really good stage set. You know, it's got video screens and it's lights, and we're loud. You know, and like I say, it's nothing. We get click. We play to a click, but everything you hear is, you know, made on stage, and we do justice to the energy and the excitement. You know, we just get out every night and hit it as hard as we can and do it. It's a rock concert, you know, five nights a week, and love it.
What's your favorite song to play?
Oh, I couldn't say. There's so many great songs in it. I mean, they're just such brilliant songs. Like I said, we do a medley with 70s stuff, starting with More Than a Feeling, Boston, and we do the 80s stuff. We do ZZ Top. We do obviously Van Halen, AC/DC. We do Stairway to Heaven. Of course, we do Light My Fire. We do Hendrix, you know, Along the Watchtower. It's, just rock, just giant rock hits, you know.
You mentioned Light My Fire. I actually saw Robbie Krieger here in I think it was in St. Pete, like, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, second row. It was like, it was insane. I don't know how. I got it. It was like $20. I was like, this is like the, I know. I'm sitting in the second row with my son. It was really cool because, you know, he was probably 24 at the time or something, or 22 maybe. And, you know, it was good because this is something I listened to growing up, and he was familiar with the music. So it was a good time for us together. But I read an article from Robbie many, many years ago. And I remember him saying the thing with his guitar playing, it was very unique to the Doors and it wasn't necessarily transferable to stuff outside. And I was curious, in playing it, do you see like...
I don't know. I couldn't really talk too much about his playing other than whenever I see him play, because my dear friend, long-time friend, Phil Chen, you know who that is?
I know that name.
Phil Chen, he's pretty much kind of like a legend, really, for a bass player. As a bass player, he came from Jamaica in mid-60s and was part of the movement that brought Jamaican music into London, the very first wave of it, which, of course, is the beginnings of which turned into bands like Specials and Madness and all that stuff. And then even today, you wouldn't have No Doubt, you wouldn't have even stuff to like Amy Winehouse. You know, it's thread all the way through it, Jamaican music in London. Anyway, but he came over with that, and he's most famous for three Rod Stewart albums. You Dear Think I'm Sexy, you know. He played on Blow by Blow, Jeff Beck, which is, you know,
Shit.
Yeah, that's Phil right there. And you know, like 50 gold albums or whatever. So that's Phil. He's my dear friend. And but he plays for Robbie. He played back in the 70s with Robbie in the Butts band. And now he plays with Robbie doing the Doors stuff. So I've gotten to see Robbie play many times with him and even got on stage with Robbie. And he's just amazing.
Yeah.
Always so good. Always so good. He's an amazing guitar player. And I guess his guitar playing has elements of like Latin in it and classical.
Yes. Yes.
And he started off, I think, in folk as well. I don't know. So I couldn't really say. And he would have grown up on the original like rockers, like Cliff Gallup and Scotty Moore and all that, those guys as well. So he's just brilliant.
Yeah, he really is.
Those albums.
Oh my brilliant. God. He makes it look, when he's playing, it was just, he's a kind of a slight guy. And so but he's so, it's like effortless. Why? Yeah, of course it's not, but you know, he makes it look like he's one with that freaking SG,
yeah,
he's man.
Totally effortless. Effortless.
Yeah.
I know. He's just like, oh, let's do another song. And
I'm just
brilliant.
Robbie Krieger. I know.
That's it. It's great.
I know it was the best part about
Howard.
What's that? Sorry. No, go ahead. Howard.
Well, I kind of changed the subject, but Howard's very effortless when he plays too. Howard Lease. I'm very effortless.
Have to see.
Killer.
We come out to Vegas once in a while, man. I'm going to have to see that show.
Yeah, right on.
What would you say the top three, if you can pick, music experiences you've had? For whatever reason, either because of your work, the playing you did, the personalities involved, the time and place, the nostalgia, what would be the top three?
I guess obviously recording the Dio album, writing and recording that, and then writing and recording the Violet's Demise album as well. That's two. And then, I hate to say now, but I think now, really, doing this, I'm really honing my chops with the Rock Vault and playing with these amazing guys.
And by the way, I want to thank Bjorn, I think, hooked us up. And, man, he's played with a lot of people, and he didn't stop raving about you. So
he's a really, really amazing player. I saw him play with his group, but he's playing with the group called Foundry with Mark Bowles singing.
Yeah.
And I saw them a couple nights ago in the Hard Rock, actually.
They were in Vegas. That's right. I saw him on social media.
He's an amazing player and just really great guy. Such a nice guy.
Very nice guy, man. I really enjoyed talking with him.
Right on.
Man, so you grew up in a small town in the UK. What was your childhood like?
Just a little suburban country sort of, you know, sheltered, you know, little upbringing.
Do you have any brothers or sisters, and did they play music?
Two sisters. Neither of them do. Actually, my little sister does now. She's actually getting really good on the guitar.
that's funny, man.
Yeah.
And it sounds like your folks are really supportive of your playing, like your dad when you said that comment.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, dad was – he used to come to my gigs with me as a kid. take me to gigs, you know, and he sort of enjoyed the music through me. He loves music, and he always had like swing albums and jazz albums, and then he'd hear me playing AC/DC and Deep Purple from my room, and that, you know, introduced him to that, and he's always been, you know, number one fan and supporter, you know.
That's really cool. And,
yeah, yeah.
It's funny, people, when I'm, if I'm in somewhere where people know me and they know the show, they say, what is the most common things that the most successful players have? And parental support by far is the number one thing that everybody has in common, like 98%. And even if there was like dysfunction in the house, like mom was an alcoholic or dad was an alcoholic, or they were broke, or they just had, you know, tough dysfunctional things, that they were supportive.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. It was,
I can believe it.
Yeah. Really made a huge difference. When you first started playing professionally, and it might not have happened with Dio, because I'm sure they were really, I don't know if there was any surprises, but what were some of the bigger surprises about being a professional musician that you were like, oh, I didn't know this was part of the deal? Not necessarily bad things, just things about
the business. Yeah. Oh God, it's a difficult question. I wish I could be interesting for you, but I don't know how to answer that. I mean, it was all new to me. It was all new to me. I just was learning as I went, and playing on these giant Marshalls and with these amazing players, I don't know. Ronnie just let me do my thing, and they gave me pointers along the way, and I don't know really how I could elaborate on that. To be honest.
Was it weird, like the very first time you get on stage and you've got four Marshall heads with eight stacks behind you, and all of a sudden you turned up, like feeling that in an arena of 25,000-30,000 people? Was it?
I remember in the rehearsal rooms, it was cool to play through those like double stacks and how loud it was, and that was a new experience. But on the stage, I remember it was hard to get on a big stage. You can't hear anything suddenly.
Hmm.
I remember that. It was like everything seems really distant apart from each other. The first experience I had, because I was very confident, and I just got up on stage, but everything went wrong the first show, and it was a nightmare. So from then on, I was a bit more cautious about it, but some of the songs, like covering, like let's say We Rock, that was actually challenging for me. Some of them were easier for me. Like I always found the Rainbow stuff, like from Ritchie Blackmore stuff, that was really comfortable for me. But some of the Viv stuff, like from Holy Diver, I found that quite difficult. I think because stylistically I wasn't similar to Viv, so I think there was some difficulties in some of that stuff, but sure, most of it was very comfortable for me.
Very cool. Is there anything like advice wise, if you had to go back and give yourself advice, you know, to young Rowan 20 years ago, anything?
I'd say, carpe diem, really. you know.
Let the buyer beware. Seize the day.
I mean, you know, life is short, and I mean, just those, there's nothing else really. Those good life, you know, have fun. Yeah. Remember to have fun.
Were you like more serious and less?
I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. It's not that I didn't have fun. So what, to the young Rowan, I don't know. I would have just said, don't sweat the small stuff. And life isn't a rehearsal.
That
this is it.
Yeah. You know what, man? You know where I first heard that? About 15 years ago, maybe 10 to 15 years ago, I watched a documentary on the making of The Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, right. Wonderful.
And they talked about, it was funny. They talked about, the song The Lunatic Is on the Grass, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote that sitting in King's College Chapel in Cambridge. And the reason he wrote it was because he said it was really weird. They had this beautiful patch of grass, and then instead of being able to walk on it and enjoy it, they had these signs, you're not allowed on the grass.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's how they thought of the song. And it was right on this bench there. And it was really funny when I mentioned to my wife from the UK, we went over there many 20 years ago probably, or right after we saw that. So it had to be, 15 years ago maybe I saw that, and it was right after that. And I remember I bought a Walkman with me. Shows you how dated this is.
Oh, yeah.
And or maybe it was even an iPod at the time. And I had the two split headphones, and I sat on the same bench with my son, and we played that album. Just listen to it. Really cool thing to do. And it was just like,
connecting to the,
it's connecting to the whole vibe. Cause they've always been my favorite band, but he said that he said what you just said, there's no dressing. He said, most people go through life planning on something else to happen once they finish this thing.
Absolutely. And I think I'm still guilty of it. And I have to remind myself,
yeah,
you're thinking like the future and this and that and this is going to be and that's going to be, but yeah, that's right, it's not a rehearsal,
there's no dressing.
This is it.
Yeah,
this
he said he said life starts at dot and then that's it. And when I heard it, I was really ready to hear that message, and it really impacted my life. And not that I've mastered this by a long shot, but I became so much more aware of this, and to just, I hate to sound so cliched, living in the moment, but just to be just to make sure I'm present more at things, because there is no dress rehearsal, and I'm guilty of that because I'm always want to reward myself when this happens, but that's bullshit. You should reward yourself every day,
So right on.
That was really good.
Really good advice. Yeah.
I thought I was blown away when I heard that. So we write that down, man. I like that. Life is not a dress rehearsal.
I think it,
No,
T-shirt or something,
Yeah. I think that'll be on the back of the first Everyone Loves Guitar merch that comes out. Let's talk about gear for a few minutes, man. What are you playing guitar-wise? Like, what's your number one, and what other couple of guitars would round out your top three?
Most into my Les Paul and my Tele. And the Tele is a Greco Tele. And the Les Paul... It's just they're like classic designs. For me, you've got the Les Paul, obviously Strat, Tele, and they're just like these untouchable designs that are just so awesome.
What's your Les Paul? What year and what are you playing?
It's a reissue of like a 55 or something.
So it's custom shop.
Gold top. Historic series, I think is what it's called. Yeah.
Greco, are they out of Nashville?
No, that's a Japanese company, Greco.
Okay.
Yeah. And I endorse Zimatis guitars, and I've got a Zimatis guitar that I love as well. It's solid mahogany, one piece, and it's got a chunky neck, and it's really, that's really nice too.
Where are they at? They're out of LA?
Zimatis actually was, they are now... The headquarters is in like near Santa Barbara, I think. And they're a Japanese company that bought the designs from Zimatis. The guy Tony Zimatis was a guitar maker in London in the 50s because you couldn't get Gibsons and Fenders in England at the beginning. So they wanted good guitars, and Tony Zimatis was the guy who made these Zimatis guitars, which are high-quality guitars. And they were known for those metal front ones. Like that Ronnie Wood used to play one, Keith Richards had one, those metal front guitars. And when Tony passed, he gave his blessing that his designs would go to this company, Japanese company, Kanda Shohai, and they now own Zimatis, and they're launching them in the States. Yeah. And they also own Greco. That's why I've got that Greco as well.
Oh, okay. Very cool. How did you get over to – how long have you been in Vegas? Like, were you – how long – you were in L.A. for a while, for a long time, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I've still sort of got my roots there, but I've been pretty much solidly in Vegas because of this show for the last like 2 years.
Gotcha. You like it?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I do.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, there's lots of parks and beautiful red rocks and everything. Yeah. Red Rock, where to hike and everything. It's just gorgeous around there, and nice people. It's got quite a small town feel about it. Really, it's nice.
It's interesting, man. We went every time. Not every time. We went to this place, Red Rock Canyon. I'm sure you've been there.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Blue Bonnie Springs, I think it's called, where they go horseback riding, and then there's Red Rock Canyon there. Man, that was it was really funny because we went there about 3 years ago, and we originally went there about 25 years ago. Fuck, I'm dating, but I'm old. But when the first time we went there, man, it was dirt roads. Driving out there from the strip.
Oh, wow.
And then right, we went there 3 years ago. It was I couldn't believe it. It was all proper roads. Everything was built up. There was, I mean, I was like, and of course, 25 years is a long time, but you know, it was just amazing to see that transformation, man. Really
right
cool
on.
Place.
Right on. Yeah. It's really getting larger. Vegas, lots of building. Yeah. But I've only been here a couple of years, but it's like I say, it's got kind of a small town feel about it, really. And the community, like, it's really, there's a lot of love in the community, to not sound cheesy, but in amongst the musicians and the performers and everything, it's like, it's nice.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
Anybody who influences your playing that people would be surprised to hear?
I don't know, really. My first thing as a kid was folk guitar lessons and then classical guitar lessons. So I guess that's in there somewhere.
Yeah, that is surprising.
Yeah.
Hey, name a couple of players you've enjoyed playing with.
Howard Leese from Phil Chen.
You're consistent.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
There's so many. I mean, there's so many. I've played with some good players.
What's the best guitar, best amp you've ever owned?
I don't know, really. No, really. I couldn't really say one, to be honest.
Hmm. Gotcha. Desert Island Discs, man.
Oh, yeah. I've got this answer already. Top three. Sabbath, Bloody Sabbath, Sgt. Pepper, and Zep 4.
Those are great records, man. Those are really good records. You know, it's funny. I'm a big Sabbath fan, but I got to tell you, man, I think Mob Rules is one of the top records, you know.
It is, and I feel bad even not putting a Dio record in there, actually.
Yeah, I mean,
but Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules, they're incredible records.
Absolutely. I mean, I think Iommi played as good on those as he ever did on anything.
Oh, definitely. And they were a different style than the Sabbath with Ozzy. It was a different style.
Totally different.
You know, everyone probably argue on that, but there's a lot of difference about it, you know, obviously.
Oh, the production was different. The mix, everything was totally different. And some of that had to do with the time period too, you know, because when was the first Sabbath album out? Like in 69 or something?
69,
like
I think. Yeah, 68, 69. And I think Ronnie, from what I hear, Ronnie was really pushing it to be a bit more up to date sounding.
Well, he did.
What I hear, I don't know how true that is.
Well, whatever. It was more up to date. It was more up to date. Are you a rule breaker or a rule follower, man?
Probably a follower. Probably a rule follower.
No, it's all good.
Yeah.
This is a tough question, and you don't have to answer if you don't want to. It's always tough for musicians. What do you like most about yourself, Roland?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. My incredibly good looks.
I'm not laughing at your looks. I'm just laughing
no,
at
that was a joke.
Your answer. I know. Someone else said that one time. My incredibly good looks. Best childhood memory?
I don't have one. I mean, there was a good childhood. Good childhood. Music has just been a joy for me my whole life, really, I suppose. If something came to mind, I don't know.
What's a day look like for you now? What does an average day look like?
Well, being that I work nights, five nights a week. I don't get up until like 10 at the earliest, really, and then have some coffee. My roommate's got a couple dogs, so that's always nice to hang out with the dogs, have some coffee, and then maybe do a couple things I've got to do, do some guitar practice, or playing or writing, or and then I usually like to go down to the show around 4 because we get fed there in the cafeteria in the hotel, and then I like to chill out backstage.
You get fed in Vegas is pretty good food.
Yeah, the cafeteria. Well, at the Hard Rock they have an employees, you know, cafeteria where it's
Very cool, man. Hey, who's had the biggest influence on your life musically and then personally?
Oh, it'd have to be Ronnie Dio. I mean, he's totally changed my life. That would be the answer.
For both?
Yeah, I would have to say because, you know, I still think about him like, you know, he was a very, very smart guy and a wise guy, and he knew the business and he knew people really well. So, oh man, he told me that, you know, he said that, oh, it's, you know, it's true. You know, I often think about that, Ronnie, like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I couldn't be more exact than that, really.
Do you have any interests or hobbies outside of music?
Yeah, I'd like to build a guitar one day. I like a bit of reading. I don't read enough. I think I should read more. Reading's great. And hiking. I love the outdoors hiking.
You're in a great place for it.
Yeah. I don't go much, but I do love it. The Southwest, you know, the deserts and all that. It's just great. I love it.
What's your favorite place you've traveled, man? You've been all over the world.
I think of the Southwest, like, you know, as I say, like California and Arizona and that area. I just love that countryside down in that way. So
it's funny when you, to me, like Cambridge is. It's always the grass is always greener, you know.
Yeah,
I was there, I thought it was gorgeous, man.
Oh, it is, man. Cambridge is awesome. There's even the middle of the town is even medieval. Goes like these teeny little streets and everything. It's England's the south part of England is very picturesque.
Yeah,
it's very picturesque. And my sister's in the west. And that's these rolling hills, Cotswolds, rolling hills, little cobblestone walls and stuff. It's beautiful out there.
It's funny.
Wales.
I think the drinking age is younger there because I remember we went into – there was like a liquor store. You know, there's like that main strip in Cambridge across from the college. And there was a liquor store there. We went in and my son was 16 at the time or 15. And they asked him, did he want a drink? And they didn't ask his age or anything. Of course, he said, yeah. and it was vacation, so I didn't bitch, you know, let him have a drink. Yeah. But I didn't. It was really weird, like not weird in a bad. It was just very different, you know. Here they're like, oh, you know, you'll get arrested and thrown in jail if you serve somebody under 21. You know, you got to proof people all the time.
Serious. Right? That was one of the. I remember that. Yeah. The coming over and
yeah, you couldn't drink.
Well, that's right. I couldn't drink. I wasn't allowed in bars and you go, when you do buy liquor, it's like, you know, well,
let me see your ID.
It's not, when I grew up, the attitude towards alcohol was definitely much more
liberal.
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah. They didn't look at it as like
dangerous.
Yeah. Young man.
Which of course it is dangerous, but
most important lesson your business has taught you?
Most important lesson the business has taught me. Here's a good one. 90% of success is turning up.
In what way?
That's a Woody Allen one. Well, I mean, because sometimes, like, for instance, with the Radio in the Rock Vault, I was, you know, pretty, you know, apprehensive about getting up there, you know, and playing all these songs, like, I can't play The Doors, you know what I mean? Like, give me something I'm comfortable with, like, but anyway, so just doing it, and even if you think you're not ready for something, and completing things, that's, you know, that is huge. You know, if, you know, being someone who completes something and says, right, that's done, next, is the person that will succeed, instead of the person that's always trying to get that first thing perfect. And I suffer from that a bit myself. So I'm like telling myself this, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, that is important. And
I don't mean to sound preachy, but like, no, just trying to answer your question, really. Like, that to me is a good attitude for business.
Yeah.
For my business, you know, for me.
No, I agree with you, because I think you get caught up on like analysis paralysis, they call it, or whatever, or, you know,
yeah, right, yeah.
You know, done is better than perfect, you know, done, you know, get it done and get it out. And last question, man, what's been the biggest change in your personality, Rowan, over the last 10 years, and how much of that change has been deliberate and how much is just a natural part of aging?
Ah, man, I don't know. I mean, everyone changes when they get older, and I think I'm probably really patient. I'm really patient. You know, I definitely probably don't judge people like I did as a kid. I was probably more judgmental as a kid than I am now, because as part of growing older, you know, because no one's perfect. So
yeah,
neither am
sure,
I,
man.
You know.
Well, man, thank you very much for everything. And let me
Craig,
tell
thanks,
people.
Man.
Tell people you're welcome. It's my pleasure. Let me tell people where they can find you. Check out Rowan Robertson at Raiding the Rock Vault at the Hard Rock Hotel in Las Vegas. And if people go there, can they come over and say hello to you and tell them they heard you on the show or something like that?
Please yeah. Do. Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Please. That'd be great. We come out after every show.
Oh, really?
Come out after every show, and whoever wants to hang out.
Very cool, man. And also DC4, the new album. You mentioned it was called, what did you say it was? Because I have.
Oh, the new album is called Atomic Highway.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And it's just come out.
Yeah.
Just come out on High Vol Records.
Right.
Like High Volume, High Vol Records.
Check out the new DC4 album. It's out now?
It is out now.
And can people stream it and do stuff like that?
It's available from High Vol Records if you just go on and look at that, and I'm pretty certain you can download it on iTunes as well.
Awesome. And again, check out Raiding the Rock Vault in Vegas. Howard Leese is on there, Blas Elias from Slaughter, and also connect with Rowan on his Twitter account. It's just Rowan Robertson, Robertson. Anything else?
Private messages are better on Facebook as well.
Great.
What's
your Facebook?
My Facebook is just my name.
Rowan Robertson. There you go, everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
any,
yeah.
Any final words of wisdom?
Oh, no, I'm done trying to be Mr. Wisdom.
No, man, you're good. Hey, thank you for everything, man. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, Craig. Thanks.
Everybody, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it with a friend on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Thanks so much to Rowan Robertson for spending time with us. I really appreciate it. And make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.